Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are Reclaiming the Republic, and I am G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by, or also sponsored by, reclaimingtherepublic.org, 1798part2.org, and republicreview.org. You are listening to the only show with the actual solution of getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. If you're one of those patriots that is tired of the federal government usurping more and more of our liberties and powers, especially the state powers such as Obamacare, energy, education, and so forth, this is the only show that is actually giving you the solution, the constitutional process that we have to follow to get them to comply to the Constitution. So for me to do that, I actually have to go through founding documents and provide you the paradigm of the framers as they basically put this republic on course. And so if you want to call in, the number is 215-867-8255. This show is also dedicated to those state legislators as well as those grassroots leaders in the state counties, legislative districts. And that is because it is the state legislators who have the power and the authority to actually call for federal government compliance. And so this isn't GR making this up. I will give you the academic proof. I've gone through this several times, and those who've been listening that are listeners to this show actually have heard it. We go through this, and I am happy to work with everybody that wants to understand this process, because knowledge is power. And if we all have the same level of knowledge, then we can come to the same agreement, or we can acquiesce on the fundamental principles of what we need to do. Therefore, with that power, we can be very succinct and concise with our message of what we want our state legislators to do for us, because they are supposed to be our public servants, right? And I don't know if we articulate very well, because the problem is that everybody has their little pet peeve. They want their state legislators to focus on this and focus on that. And unfortunately, there's too many of us that are looking for self-interest purposes. You know, hey, can you land me a contract? Or what does it take to get this contract? That is pure self-service. If you want to be competitive, it's one thing. But if you actually want access and or favors and or the ability to bypass everybody else that is in line, that's the same thing with our immigration system. There are so many foreigners that are in other countries that do not have the same privilege as those that are on the south of our border that are just running across, and they're not getting the fair access to be able to immigrate here. And the problem is, America has always had its doors open, but the real problem, this isn't necessarily the border itself. It is why the people are crossing. It is because Mexico and the Central American countries, as well as South American countries, are so despotic that those people are literally running from the tyranny that they're living under. And oh, by the way, it's a bonus or an added feature that they're able to come here and just get into the doles of indolence at the expense of the working taxpayers. So anyway, this show is committed to those who are willing to protect all of us from tyranny. And that is why I'm focused on our state legislators, as well as those grassroots leaders that are helping to improve those who are representing us, because they are the employer of the politician, the county chairs, the legislative district chairs, and so forth. If you don't know, because this show has grown so much, if you don't know where to get my podcast, you can get them from reclaimingtherepublic.org, and that is where you'll find all of the content that you need. Right there on the homepage, I have the bullets for Republic Review and the irrefutable argument laid out, like I said, in a bullet format, excuse me, as well as the description and the process for Republic Review, as well as the model, so you can actually look at the flow chart. I would be happy to engage anybody that may have questions or concerns about this process. That being said, let me just kind of move into my three C's, because I don't say this all the time. I do have a welcome back to break where I kind of cite this every once in a while. But bottom line, if you know me, I ask that you be confidential. I go by GR, and so don't call me by my name, or anyway, be civil is the second C, and the third C is be concise. I just realized as I reached out to GoFundMe that they needed more information from me, so that's why we're not finding the GoFundMe campaign. And so I'm kind of waiting for them to get back with me as to how that information needs to be inserted, and we'll be moving forward. But we're getting really close to having that campaign done and launched. I guess it's a good time now, and now is a good time as any to grovel for support. If you happen to be living in a state that you don't know anybody leading this effort, then by all means, just reach out and I will help you. I'll help you get started, and you can help this cause. As I try to tell people, let me give you the big picture. If you understand, because I just had a conversation with a staff member, and there's this paradigm that, oh, well, we got to get this word out to all the people. I try to tell people that if you realize that it took Moses 40 years to change the culture of Israel, we don't have that time. And that was only 1 million people. They were kind of all together. They were interdependent. They didn't have a national education system that was working against them. He didn't have a progressive news media that was giving all sorts of fake news and contrary crud to fight him. So he had unattested access, and it still took him 40 years. We don't have that time. And so that's very specifically why I am, I'll just use the word targeting, that is why I am focused on the state legislators, those who have and possess the authority and the power to actually take action. I believe, and I have found quite a few, if you go to the ReclaimingTheRepublic.org page and go to my candidate endorsements, I've actually found candidates that are willing to and have signed the pledge and are committed to protecting their constituents as well as all of us from federal tyranny. That's a big step. And I did that without having to go and get everybody on board to getting this grassroots movement moving. The grassroots already exist, so that's why I'm targeting leadership. And so I need leaders in the states to be able to step up and say, I want to be a leader. I am a leader, and I'm willing to help lead with this cause. Whatever you want to put it, however you want to spin it, I am here to help you. And if you really care about getting Obamacare repealed, because we're going to talk about it a little later, film at 11, but I am telling you that even all the lip service that you're going to hear from politicians, as we have heard over the decades, they're going to do this for us, they're going to do this for us. The only thing that they ever come clean on, and the only thing that they actualize in their promises, is growing government. Every time they say they're going to reduce government, they never do. Even Reagan did not reduce government. Government actually grew under Reagan. So I just want to let you know that if you want to help, if you've got a computer and a phone, you definitely have the opportunity to, you know, step in and make a big impact for your state and become a leader. And so I actually am still kind of waiting. I kind of had to lob some information out on the Wyoming governor race, getting with the candidates. And so I'm kind of still waiting. It's an interesting situation in Wyoming as the as they start playing the politics of eligibility and so forth. So I'm going to kind of stay out of that, because my focus today is to try to actually get finished with the Madison's Virginia resolutions. And I actually, because I haven't done this yet, I think it's important that we kind of visit George Washington's words of wisdom in his farewell address, and the origins of this, and kind of the bigger picture, because there's kind of two camps, or I should say there's a disagreement on the origins of his farewell address. But as I say always, and before we go into a hard break, let me just get this out of the way. I did skim the news. I went through the different news sites. I even looked out my window, and I do not see any sign whatsoever that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical powers, roles, responsibilities. With that, that means we have to do it. That's why this show is still going to be broadcasted, and that's why I am working with a lot of people in trying to save your liberties. Now, if you want to be subjugated and you want to go ahead and let America collapse and become a part of this globalist government, because that's the direction we're going, then you may want to call in and say, hey, stop, we're kind of happy with the way we're going. And if that's the case, then I understand that, but that still won't stop me. So you'll have to find me and stop me that way, I guess. But anyway, I always had this question, and tomorrow it'll be open lines and free, but why is it important? This is the question. Why is it important that in reading our founding documents, why do we need to read them and kind of read them regularly to stay abreast with what they really said and what they meant? It's kind of like, why is it important to read the scriptures, not just once, but kind of on a regular basis? Why do we need to read the scriptures? And so with that, I'll let you ponder on that, and we'll also start heading into this hard break. And when we get back from the hard break, I have a few little comments on all the little news stuff, but I will get into these the last couple resolutions from Virginia, and then we'll get into Washington's comments to the nation. So we'll be right back after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so everybody has been, I guess, talking about this Ocasio Cortez and her Freudian slip when she talked about let's turn this seat red. That truly is a Freudian slip, right? I mean, it's obvious that she has an affinity to communism. And I forget who I was talking to, but somebody was asking, are the origins of blue and red, how did we get into this situation? And it has always been, the identity politics has always been driven from the left. They always want to make sure that they are obfuscating their reality. So they knew that they didn't want to have the red color associated to them, because then it would be very obvious. The term better dead than red goes long before the 80s. And as we started identifying, you know, color parties and so forth, the left was very quick at sidestepping and going, we're going to make you guys red. So it falls in line with that old saying, evil is good and good is evil, because it nothing is what it appears. And so that is how we got into that. But obviously, she understands what red really means, not necessarily these arbitrary color assignments for parties. She means that let's turn that seat communist. She also asserts that conservatives are afraid of her. She keeps on saying this. And what she is doing is she's feigning knowledge. She's faking that she knows something. The fact is that she is the poster child for our education. More importantly, for our education system. And her arrogance has blinded her to the fact that it is not our fear of her, it is our fear of idiots like her from that factory that makes these idiots. And I'm using the term idiot in reference to how Lenin referred to the useful idiots in moving government in the direction it needed to go. And that's all she's doing. She's just a useful idiot moving things along. Why do people do this? Why do people want to have this revolution? And because if you look at the history of the players that are involved in the revolution, unless you are in that inner sanctum ring, like with Napoleon and or Lenin, Stalin, and so forth, unless you're in that inner ring, you're not going to probably bode well, because sometimes those people that know too much, I mean, how many people in the Clintons' inner ring survived? Not very many. Anybody that knows anything that's got the dirt on them, there's a term for it, and it's called Arkanside. Anyway, a little constitutional fact for today. Today happens to be the day that New York ratified their constitution. I've kind of covered that before. That was way back in 1788, so little snap with constitutional history right there. One other thing I wanted to also point out, maybe two. Does anybody remember the Arab Spring back in, 2011, 2010, when it kind of started? Well, just recently, Saudi Arabia has had a couple of oil tankers attacked in the Red Sea. And this attack had been done by none other than one of those countries that was the beginning of that Arab Spring. They were somewhat stabilized, but I want to point the finger, or I want to highlight the players that really made this whole region far less stabilized and influenced by really evil players, which is Iranian and the Houthi movement and so forth, because these Yemen ships have basically aligned with this Houthi movement from Iran. Anyway, the origins of all of this really set up by Bush, because as Bush started dumping, and you go look at the CCC, it's the commodity something something. It's where we keep all of our national reserves of grain, all unconstitutional, but this is how he used our national reserves of food. He started literally dumping food into the market. Now, he didn't do it all at once. What he did was he created a false surplus. And so what that did, as our currency started inflating, it kept the cost of food down. So everybody didn't realize that American economy, the cost of food would have been going up with the inflation, but it wasn't. He started doing this in 2006. Well, once they finally emptied the CCC or all of these grain reserves and so forth, then all of a sudden there was a shot up in price. And in a lot of these Arab nations, they're being taken care of by the king or whomever, because nobody works. That's why you see them protesting all the time. I mean, I'm sure there are people that work, but there are lots of people that really don't have jobs, so they have to have something, and so they have a benevolent monarch or what have you that is feeding them. Well, or giving them money to go buy their own food. So all of a sudden they couldn't feed themselves. And usually what happens is when you have to make a choice of who in the family gets to eat and who doesn't get to eat, you get pretty upset. So, and that's the same problem that we're starting to see with energy, because as our public utility system is being pushed into a profit base more and more, and as executives start fleecing more and more money out of the public purse, because that's what these public utilities are, then and our cost of energy keeps going up. Well, there's a term for this, and it's called energy poverty, because those people during the winter months that can no longer afford to heat or feed, you have to make a choice. Do I heat the house, or do I, you know, not buy food, or buy food and not heat the house? That is at that point where you're not making enough money to be able to cover both costs. And so very similar to the Arab Spring, that is how that all started. But the whole thing was, this was all set up by Bush, and then it was utilized and exploited by Obama in going in and helping to stabilize and allowing the Islamic Brotherhood to literally take over, and these radicals to actually get seated in power. So there you go. I mean, so as we start looking at events, if you look at the bigger picture of how we all got into this point, or how they got into that situation with Saudi Arabia that is destabilized, there is a historical chain that you can follow back. And it always comes back to people doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. And as a matter of fact, we don't have the business of, you know, inflating markets, suppressing inflation, and those types of things. Nor does the federal government have the constitutional authority to store grains. Even though that's a good idea, I think that's something that the state should be doing, not the federal government. And the states are kind of happy, because then they can save their money and not spend it on being frugal and good caretakers of the people's purse as well, because they're constantly being bailed out by the federal government. We have a real problem, friends. And the only way we are really going to deal with this is deal with this head on by getting our states to step in and say, you need to do your job and get the government out of our knickers. The federal government, that is. One other thing that really helps, I think, resonate this, because if you haven't heard, because Ryan is leaving, there's already some posturing in who's going to become the new Speaker of the House. Jim Jordan's throwing his hat into the ring from Ohio, Republican from Ohio, and he's running, he's campaigning his fellow congressman on this platform of taking on these issues. Welfare reform, spending cuts, Obamacare repeal, reforming the FBI, and taking meaningful action on the border. I mean, you know, this is all kind of ambiguous, but we've heard this Obamacare repeal before. They're not going to do it. As I said, government has never been successful at decreasing itself. It may kind of, you know, wither a little bit, but it will come back in full bloom when the next despot takes over and revitalizes those bad programs. The only way we will get these things out from underneath us is by the states to step up and say, you do not have the authority, as Thomas Jefferson and James Madison did. That's why I read these founding documents for you, so that you can hear it from them, and it's not just me saying so. It's really easy for me to say so-and-so said, but it's a lot different when I actually read those words. And as difficult as it is to read the vernacular of that time, I think it's important. I think it's critically important. One other thing before we go into break, I find it interesting how we constantly see YouTube and these other social media fronts that are, you know, purging and using their own biases as to how they dictate with their own moral compass on what speech is hate and what isn't. In other words, they're all okay, you know, chanting all sorts of, you know, racial epithets towards, you know, white people and that type of thing. But when it comes to like Alex Jones, because YouTube just deleted some of his videos, and not that I'm here to defend this man, but the point is that we need to get the government to incentivize the freedom of speech. If they want to use filters on very specific types of speech and use biases, then I believe the government should have a heavier-handed tax on companies that do that. That's how we incentivize them to say, you know what? You know, we're better off if we allow people to be able to say whatever it is they want to say. And that way, the government doesn't necessarily have to dictate, but they do use incentives with corporate taxes and literally going after them to say, well, because you're a bias-based company, then we're going to tax you more. If you want to be a free company and open, then we'll let you go. As you know, I'm at a hard break. I've got to go. So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And as I was going into the break, talking about YouTube and all of these, I'll call them social media, open forums, public, it doesn't matter. Bottom line is that this is an open arena, and they're saying that this is all social, you can do, but when Facebook starts going after YouTube, Twitter, all of these progressive ideological institutions start going after those who have a contrary perspective and or view to their ideologue, then, and their ideologies, then you will find that they become far less tolerant. And as they become more and more enabled, tolerance goes at a much lower and lower and lower threshold. Therefore, we have to be very, very conscious of what we're doing, who we're supporting, and we need to start getting behind and supporting those companies and forcing them out to actually take a stand. I believe there's an organization, I need to look it up. I think there's a social media group out there, and I'm hoping to have Alan Gottlieb on. He is the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation, and I believe they've got an organization called constitutionnet.com, which is like a social media group. And there's MeWe as well, and people are trying to come up with competitive forums and so forth that you can use as an alternative from Facebook. It's really hard once something gets entrenched. Literally, once people make the choice, it's kind of like, excuse me, it's kind of like back in the old VCR days. You remember those? When they first came out, there were two competitors, Beta and VHS, right? Who won the war and why? It came down to the porn industry. The porn industry chose VHS as the preferred medium in their distribution of their filth. And so they were the ones that literally killed Beta because it was the end product and the demand. And that speaks to the morality and where our nation was at that point in time. It is, you think we've gotten better since the 80s? Because that's when that determination in the market space was created. And the driving factor was pornography. That was that long ago. How do you believe we have progressed as a society? Have we become more moral or more immoral as we see kids literally shooting kids and so forth? I mean, I've railed on this a long time. We've been debasing ourselves as a society for way too long, and we need to start opening up these concepts of free speech and responsible speech. You cannot go into a fire, or I should say, you cannot go into a theater yelling fire unless there's a real fire going on, because it's a public safety issue. Our framers actually had laws on the books that did not allow free, willy-nilly speech or those types of things in putting the public safety in danger. They, when it came to political speech, there were no holds barred. I believe during the Thomas Jefferson and Adams presidential run, I think it was Adams was campaigning that Thomas Jefferson was going to kill your babies and that type of thing. It was literally one of the most vitriol and most extreme political campaigns I think the nation has ever seen. But that is okay, because it's important that people have that freedom of conscience. As Madison said in his paper on property, our conscience and our expressions are our property. When we start surrendering those, we've definitely taken a huge step back at losing our rights. So let me state what I've always stated when I get into these citations. Are the words in our founding documents that I'm going to cite at this point in time, are these the words of deceit? In other words, is Madison here with the Virginia legislators, is he really writing lies on paper? Or have we been lied to by our professors and our progressive colleges and education system? That is something that you have to answer. But I've come to the conclusion, and I am so impressed by the integrity and the quality of character of our framers. And I believe that we're at the precipice of collapse, but at the same time, I see coming from behind us an equal level of integrity of good leaders that are willing to become what I call the reframers in framing our future. And so, not by reframing the Constitution, but doing what's necessary in moving this republic back onto the track that the framers put us on. Anyway, these are the last two resolutions within the Virginia Resolution of 1798. This was December 24th when the Senate signed this off and agreed, and then they sent it off. So, in other words, the Senate in Kentucky, or no, Virginia, was working on December 24th. What day was that? Oh, that's right. To us, that's Christmas Eve. They were working that day? Yes. And I have a show coming up for Christmas where I will talk about the historical perspective and how we've been manipulated into creating this holiday called Christmas Eve. I don't want to be kicking Santa or, you know, giving a bad tone to, you know, celebrating this perceived day of Christ's birth, but because it's important, if we can find a day and a way to center Christ in our life, that's a good thing. But it was all about manipulation, and I will get into that this coming Christmas time. However, what Madison says here is he says that the good people of this Commonwealth, having ever felt and continuing to feel the most sincere affection for their brethren of the other states, the truest anxiety for establishing and perpetuating the union of all, and the most scrupulous fidelity to that Constitution, which is the pledge of mutual friendship and the instrument of mutual happiness, the General Assembly doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions of the other states. So what he's doing here is just like what Jefferson did in the very beginning in this document. He literally audited the Constitution. He went through and said, hey, you know, we the states are the, you know, the supreme entities and the only parties of this contract. He goes on and says, these are the powers that you are limited to, and what you're doing are not enumerated or not listed within these powers. And then he goes on and says, and some of these powers are actually negatives or things to keep you from doing these things, and you're even violating these things. So what would you call what he was just doing? And if you look at what Jefferson was just doing in 1798 in the Kentucky Resolution, they were auditing the Constitution. They were literally going through it and calling out which lines they were violating and which lines they were usurping and so forth. And so these resolutions are literally a, It is a rubber stamp, or not a rubber stamp, it is the breadcrumb trail that actually proves that the process that the framers used in dealing with federal encroachments upon the state's authority and rights was an audit, period. This only validates what GRI, right here, right now, is asserting, that the states have to step up, the states have to step in and assert their authority, and then they have to call out every single violation. They cannot leave one unturned. And then the states have to decide whether they're going to allow those violations to continue, because there's only one process to allow them to continue. And that process is called the Article 5 process. So, anyway, I go on because right here he is literally calling for these other states to join them. So that's what he says here. Doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions of the other states in confidence that they will concur with this Commonwealth in declaring, as it does hereby declare, that the acts aforesaid are unconstitutional, and that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each, and when he says each, by each state, for cooperating with this state, and co-operating, you know, instead of cooperating, cooperating with this state in maintaining the authorities, rights, and liberties referred to the states respectively or to the people. It's basically kind of echoing again the 10th Amendment. Then the final resolution is that the governor be desired to transmit a copy of the foregoing resolutions to the executive authority of each of the states with the respect that the same may be communicated to the legislatures thereof, and that a copy be furnished to each of the senators representatives representing this state in the Congress of the United States. So in other words, he was just doing a broad broadcast of literally getting all of this data out to all of these leaders and players in government. And so I have to finish this thought when we get back from the break. So please stay tuned. This is really big stuff, and you're finding out that GR isn't making this stuff up. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And just as I was saying, that when we were going into break, you're actually realizing as we kind of peel this curtain back that this really isn't about, you know, me, my idea, GR is the one. This is actually Thomas Jefferson and James Madison who are clearly executing a plan. This plan was actually thought up long before the Constitution was even written. These ideas and concepts literally go back that far. If you read the notes on Virginia, or the notes on the state of Virginia written by Thomas Jefferson back in, 1784, 1785, he already basically stated that the sovereigns, and in the state of Virginia, the concept was that the sovereigns of the people, because they didn't, so let me give you the accurate picture. Virginia was not designed as a dual sovereign bicameral legislative body as it was after the Constitution. Before that, it was just literally representatives of the people. But In the case of the notes on Virginia, when Thomas Jefferson said that the people would be the ones that would call for a convention, in not a convention in changing the amendment, but a convention of the leadership to literally force the compliance of the Constitution of the state of Virginia. Now, in context to the United States Constitution, what they did was they did the exact same thing, but they just applied it to the Constitution of the United States. That's why when one reads Federalist Paper number 49, 49 clearly identifies the process of what they're doing. As a matter of fact, it's really important because when I cite these types of things, I think it's important to provide you with the process and or the words, reading it and so forth. So let me pull up the Federalist Papers for you. I'm going to go to Federalist Paper number 49. This was written, I forget what day it was. They don't even put it. On another page, they'll actually tell you when this. Actually, what here it is right here, February 5th, 1788. And the name of the article's title is Method of Guarding Against the Encroachments of Any One Department of Government by Appealing to the People Through a Convention. Now, you got to understand, a convention in those days, they did conventions for everything. I mean, literally everything was done because they were a representative government. When they ratified the Constitution, they didn't have an election with the people. They had the people choose representatives to go as delegates to represent them and to debate the issues at hand and to whether they ratified the Constitution or not. Today, we just put initiatives out and it's a mass populace type of majority rules. That is a democratic form of government. And so we need to get away from that, these direct initiatives and so forth. But that's a small problem compared to the federal government spending trillions and trillions of dollars each year, putting us in debt and literally throwing us into the ditch and setting us up for a global colossal collapse. So we've got to fix that problem first before we start, you know, putting Band-Aids on fingers and toes and so forth. So anyway, what's important is the fact that the terminology that he used in the title of the Federalist Paper number 49. This was not something that just was concocted. This was a reply to the Anti-Federalists because they wanted to make sure that that this process was going to be honored, but they only saw the Article 5 process. So if you read this Federalist paper, you'll notice that Madison does not mention an amendment process for this convention. He did not mention anything whatsoever of the Article 5 process. This convention was literally designed to enforce compliance to the Constitution. And in Jefferson's notes on the state of Virginia, the intent was to make sure that the federal government was, or not the federal government, but the state government of Virginia was doing what they were supposed to do. And a lot of people read Jefferson's book. It was the first piece of literature, recognized literature out of America that made such a big press. I mean, that's probably where he got a lot of money, but he spent far more money than he ever earned because he died broke. Anyway, let me get into Washington's farewell address. And I don't have a lot of time to go through all of this, so let me set the stage for this first, and we'll get into this tomorrow if necessary. Washington was literally considering retiring after his first term. He did not want to do another term. He had already seen two people that he had the most admiration for and respect, Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton, literally go at odds with each other. And so Washington was going, I cannot put up with this political stuff. This is way too serious for me. And it wasn't until he was basically convinced that he needed to run again because the government had still not solidified that they needed his leadership for a second term. So he went ahead with that. But before he did, he actually came to James Madison when he was deciding he was just going to go ahead and retire because politics was just way too serious of a game for him. And he took it personally. He took a lot of this stuff that was going on very personally. And I think that there were some that probably had to not necessarily talk him off the edge, but help him kind of understand that, these are very passionate things. When somebody has these core principles, And for a military-minded person, they don't necessarily understand that. His focus was discipline. Remember, if you left your ranks, you were to be shot. If you, you know, fell back or ran away from your post, he did not tolerate that one bit. So anyway, he was looking to get out. He was looking to retire. He was done with all of these shenanigans. So what he had decided to do was go to Madison, and he asked Madison to write a speech for his farewell address because he wanted to make an official statement to the people that he could, you know, kind of create a hallmark message for his ending his presidency. Madison wrote one and gave it to him, and he walked away and he kept it, even though he decided to stay in office. Well, there is the claim, because there is no doubt in anybody's mind that Madison did write his first farewell address. There is a claim that because Madison fell out of grace with George Washington due to some of the affairs, not affairs, but due to some of the issues that were arising between Hamilton and Madison and Jefferson. Jefferson and Madison were basically going at odds with Hamilton because Hamilton was kept on trying to violate the Constitution with, it, what do you call that, implied powers and those types of things. Anyway, long story short, they say that George Washington went to Alexander Hamilton to write his farewell address for his second term. In looking at this farewell address, I truly believe that more of this was literally Madison's words, because some of these things I'm going to point out, Hamilton would never have had him read or say. I truly believe that most of this whole thing was literally from Madison's writings instead of anything that Hamilton would have given him, because Hamilton became the advocate of implied powers and usurpations, wanting to move the federal government into a full supremacy and reducing the states into administrative functions. And so the first thing I'm going to get into is the 10th paragraph where Washington talks about religion. And he says this: "The name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. With slight shades of difference, you have the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles." What he just said there was he just said that everybody had the same religions. He may be boilerplating, but the amount of Christians in America is so overwhelming at this point in time. I mean, anybody that was not a Christian was really an outlier. And he goes on and says, "You have in a common cause fought and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the work of joint counsels and joint efforts of common dangers, sufferings, and successes." And so clearly he's pointing out, just like John Jay did in Federalist Paper number 2, that we all were at that point in time of the same faith, same race, and we came from the same area, just from 4 different migrations and zones and so forth, that even Thomas Sowell gets into that. So the mind and the paradigm of the people was literally one type of body, one type of mind. And that's what John Jay says. We're literally kind of one big family. And in addressing the issue of why did they not say that we were a Christian nation or that we were Christian, it was like stating the obvious. Do we write at the very beginning of the Constitution that we are writing these words on paper? There were many things that were just obvious that they did not state, nor did they feel it necessary to state. And so I'm out of time, but I have a lot more on the farewell address to give you some analysis on this and why this is so important, because he gets into the fundamental principles of why we need to stick and follow the Constitution of the United States. Anyway, I am G.R. Mobley. I'm reclaiming the Republic with your help. And tomorrow I will be back with more insights. Thank you so much. God bless. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.